This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast 146. 146 is the 4th of February. Yeah, that's right. We're already in Feb. And as you can see, for those on YouTube and those that are not on YouTube, we've got a guest with us. Yes, we have got Paul Edenbrow, the winner of the 2024 Twin Peaks Investing Challenge with us, with an astonishing, my jaw dropped when Henry was always racing past 50% and said, oh yeah, we've got another, the person's actually gone over 50%. I was like, that person has to come on the show. I was banging on the table. And Paul has agreed to come on the show. So Paul is on the show after smashing it with 2024 with a 58.5. I got the numbers right there, Paul?
I think that was it. Yeah,
58.5% return by choosing five stocks. I nearly said random stocks. Then five stocks, which he researched really hard for the comp for 2024 and smashed it out of the park and won the bundle of prizes from our collaborator, supporters and sponsors, which were Harriman House with the 15 books that Paul's got. Some of them we might be able to see in the background there. Also ShareScope as well. He's got 12-month subscription to ShareScope and he's going to get a 12-month subscription from Investors Chronicle as well. That's the bundle I managed to get together from navigating and negotiating with various different individuals the year before last, for 2024. And Paul's going to get all of that going forward. Welcome, Paul. Henry, welcome.
Hi, Pete.
Great to be here, Peter.
Hi, Henry.
Hi, Paul. Thank you ever so much for agreeing to come on, mate, and at short notice as well. We're going to go straight on here. We're going to dedicate this. We're going to do that to you, mate. Yeah, we're going to celebrate you in this pod, right?
Wow.
Henry, I think some of the things I know about you now as well, we're going to ask you some questions. Henry's going to be celebrating, never mind the 58%. So are you excited, Henry? Look at his little face. Look at his little face. He's so happy. Right, Paul. Welcome, sir. Your Twitter handle is at Paul Edenbrow. For those of that haven't done so already, Paul's got about 50 followers or there or thereabouts. He deserves and should have more. So before you even finish listening to this pod, just stop, pause, go and follow his accounts, right? And get some wisdom regarding investing. Okay, Paul, we're going to start at the top, mate. Yeah. As I always like to do, I'm a journeyman. I like history, yeah? And I want to start with, firstly, first sort of thoughts and processes, what got you interested in investing? What was the first thing that happened? Was it mum, dad, somebody, uncle, aunt, whatever, that you went, this is interesting. I may take an interest in that. What was the first thing that happened to you, sir?
I guess my first sort of memory really is as a young boy in the 80s when my dad, I remember dad talking about shares in British Gas and British Telecom as a result of privatisation in the 80s. And I think that really was my first recollection of anything sort of share related. Obviously, I didn't really know too much about what shares were back then, but I think that sparked my interest. And then, you know, as I've got older, I've always had an interest in business, an interest in finance. And another vivid memory I have is in the, I guess it must have been the 90s. I'm not really quite sure, to be honest. It's way before I started investing. Just watching programs on the television, like Working Lunch. I was a big fan of that when it was on the telly with Adrian Childs. And I can vaguely remember some sort of fantasy share dealing television program on BBC Two or something. I have no idea what it was called, but I just thought that was quite interesting as well. I think I actually encouraged my dad to buy some shares in one or two companies. Of course, they absolutely tanked. So I don't know if he's forgiven me for that now, but this is brilliant. When I was a teenager, probably. And really, I sort of first got into investing properly with my own sort of real money, I guess. I think it was probably about 15 years ago now. And anybody who's been in the, been trading, been investing for a long time will probably remember the big event that got me into it. And it was the Gatwick Gusher, the UCOG. And there was a big news story that there'd been, I don't know, 50 billion barrels of oil or whatever found near Gatwick Airport. And I just thought, I've got this money. I think I'd set up my account on the trading platform. And I thought, right, today's the day I'm going to, buy some shares for the first time. And it was literally that news story that encouraged me to do it. So I bought some UCOG shares that day. And honestly, I think they went up 100% in literally half an hour. And I thought, wow, this is like amazing. And then I think they went down again in the, back to where I bought them in about a similar time, another half hour. And I think I probably even made a loss on them. I can't remember, but I just remember think at the end of the day, just thinking, this is absolutely crazy. This is wild how you can make this amount of money in such a short space of time. And that was really, from there I was hooked really. I've made some silly mistakes like that since, but that was really my first experience.
Wow. I remember that well, you mentioned Adrian Charles there and working lunch. I remember that. A bit too early for Henry. You might be able to go back and
I thought he
have
looked
a
a
look
bit
on
familiar.
Dave or on YouTube and find some of those references that you made there. Far too young. But he knows about it. I know that he knows about it. And the privatization, I know he knows about that. But I need to stop and reminiscing about that stuff, mate, and go and we're going to talk about your career and what you're doing a bit later. And I'm sure you must have been doing something related to what you're doing now at that time. But mate, what were you thinking? UCOG, Gatwick Gusher. I remember that story brilliantly. And I was like thinking, nah. And I too watched the share price go, I think it went up more than 100% on that
Oh, it
particular day
did.
because all the
Oh,
news was all over it that day. It was in the press at the weekend. It's got a very colourful CEO. Yeah. Or still probably still has the same one who was.
I've got to leap in here, guys. Right. So hold
Okay.
on a minute. The Gatwick Airport I've heard of. I'm guessing this is some sort of oil deal.
Which airport I've heard of?
Does somebody turn up in the papers and go, "We've found oil," and then at 10 o'clock get arrested or something? What's the story?
Go, Paul. I'll let you give your version of the story. Go on.
Well, apart from the arrest bit, I don't think you're too far from the mark, basically. I think there was just a, if I remember, there was just one day there was a huge announcement and it was on breakfast TV and all sorts saying that this huge oil find had happened near Gatwick Airport. And we were going to, it was going to secure the British energy for the next few years and we were going to get all this oil out of the ground and it was fabulous and this kind of thing. And yeah, I think, Pete, you're absolutely right. For some reason, 400% is in my head. This share price just went whoosh.
Parabolic, parabolic.
So
Ev
why did
every
you think
single
that?
man and dog that had a trading account that day was piling in, literally. If they had 50 quid, they were piling. If they had 5 grand, they were piling in. And the traders were going in and out, in and out, in and out, and doubling and trebling the money on various different bits and pieces throughout that day. And I'm not even sure that day where it finished. So was it whether in fact it was the next day that it just went. Somebody else came out with some news the following day or during the day and went, "This is a load of nonsense." And it went whoosh and almost came down as fast as it went up. It might have been, the time frame might be longer. The grey matter is not quite working here, but I remember it. And ever since then, I've followed the career of their colourful CEO, which is Dave Lenigas.
That's right.
Yeah. And I think there's themes out there, whether it be the current one's Bitcoin, I think, but it's been whatever mining push or whatever, he's been involved in an entity or relating to something or other. And he'll list them, he'll JV with them, he's been in on the stock market forever. And UCOG is still his baby, I think. Is that right, Paul?
I don't know, to be honest. I don't keep a close eye on them anymore. But I just think, I suppose that day was good times. I mean, maybe not if you looked at my trading account. But yeah, I mean, I hadn't even heard of trading back then, really. Like you say, people dipping in and out. I just thought, oh, right, this is a winner. I'm going to stay in the next 10 years or whatever. But
So you're buying UCOG with a view that
Yeah.
If this has got oil underneath,
Yeah,
buy
yeah.
it now for whatever the price was. I think it was still a penny stock then.
Yeah.
Buy it for a penny, and maybe it'll get to 5p, maybe it'll get to 10p,
Yeah,
maybe get
that's
to a
exactly
pound.
what. Yeah, that's exactly
And
what I
when you see it
thought.
at 5p straight away, you're thinking, whoa. And the other people are scalping all the way through
Yeah.
that process for 20%, 100%, 400%. And they don't care. They've bought it literally for the time it takes for you to put the kettle on and boil the kettle to make a brew.
Absolutely. That's exactly what happened.
And as a newbie, you and I don't know that first time round. We think actually people are buying it and are planning to hold it.
Yeah.
No, they're not.
Yeah, no, that's you've totally hit the nail on the head. You know, like I say, I was in there for the long term, really. And as I saw, you know, I kept refreshing my balance and it was going up and up. And I thought, I'm like the best trader in the world, you know. And then, like I say, half an hour later, I was back, if not below where I started. So, yeah, fun times, but
Absolutely.
not to be recommended.
Absolutely love that story, mate. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, we're going to get into a bit more about your investing and then different sort of journey, but let's go back a bit now and let's talk about the bit studies, what you studied, how you got into your job, what you do now, so people get a perspective of who Paul Eden Brown is, please.
Well, yeah, so I was just talking to Henry just a couple of minutes before we started recording. So I basically picked economics as an A-level subject. And I don't even really know why I picked economics because, you know, at that
Oh,
age, at
great.
16, yeah, I didn't even really know what the subject entailed, to be honest. I thought it, you know, I don't even know really what I thought, but I picked it. It ended up being my favorite A level. I really enjoyed it with my teacher, Mr. Phipps, who I still remember, although I can't find him online. I have looked for him, but I can't find him. So if anybody knows Dave Phipps, then let me know.
He
He
doesn't
was a
want to
bit,
be found because he
no,
knows a guy called Paul Edenbrow.
that's
Remember
it. Yeah, no,
that.
he was inspirational to me, really. And I went to university. I did industrial economics at Nottingham University in the
Wow.
mid to late 90s. I did a couple of jobs after that. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. I didn't really like the idea of moving to London or working in the city. It just didn't really appeal to me. I think I'm more of a northerner at heart, to be honest. And I did a couple of jobs. I worked for big company, well, it was Zeneca, and then it became Syngenta. I worked for them for a couple of years, and I was going to train to be an accountant. That was sort of the next step, really. You know, that was really what the company was offering to me. I was only a finance admin person, really, just, you know, surviving, essentially. And I don't know. I just had this nagging doubt that accountancy somehow wasn't quite right. Maybe it was the fact that it's the, you know, stereotypically people see it as a bit boring, don't they? A bit dull. So I decided, I'd always had this nagging doubt, and my mum had always encouraged me, and I decided to go and train to be a teacher. So I left Syngenta. I moved to Manchester. I went to study at the University of Manchester, and I did my PGCE in economics and business studies. And you know, essentially, I haven't looked back since. So after I finished my teaching qualification, I moved to Peterborough, which is where I am now. And I've lived in Peterborough now for just over 20 years. I've been a teacher in Peterborough for just over 20 years. Yeah, and I teach economics and business studies. I've sort of had various jobs in and around the city, working for different schools. So I teach a lot of sixth formers now, economics, finance, business studies. I do a lot of the data-y type stuff for the school as well. You know, that's the sort of brain I've got, really. I think I love an Excel spreadsheet, which I know is not everybody's cup of tea, but I'm one of those people that likes Excel. So, and yeah,
You're talking all of Henry's things there now, mate. So I'm just going to leave this to Henry now to ask you a plethora of questions. I've got one main question I'm going to ask you if Henry doesn't cover it. You go, Henry, because he's mentioned Nottingham, he's mentioned economics, he's mentioned all the things that, and even
All the
Excel
buzzwords,
sheets. So
all the
you go, you
buzzwords.
ask the
Well,
questions that you
I'm
want to
going to
ask on
start
that this
by saying,
section.
if you really enjoy spreadsheets, you're going to love your subscription to ShareScope because there's so much data in this thing, like you're going to have your mind blown. So you'll have fun with that. But I kind of wanted to ask industrial economics. Now that's a course that I think it's probably called something else today. But what does that actually involve, industrial economics?
Yeah, I mean, really, what I wanted to do at university was a combination of business and economics. Economics was my favourite subject, but I didn't Well, I was a bit scared of the maths, if I'm honest, the econometric side of the like a straight economics degree. And I wanted to do like a to keep my options open, I guess. So a lot of universities do a degree called business economics. And it's obviously a combination between the two. And I was gutted because I really, really wanted to go to Nottingham. That was my first. I knew the city growing up. I loved the city. It ticked all the boxes of a place that I wanted to move to. But they didn't do business economics. So I was gutted, really. But I did my research, like I do with my stocks now. And I realised that they did this course called industrial economics. It was actually pretty similar to, business economics. And I thought, wow, this is absolutely perfect. It was a great degree. I still remember, and I tell this story to my students now, as part of the degree we did a module called Computers in Business, and the very first assessment I had to send an email to the tutor. I'd never been on the internet before. I'd never sent an email before.
Racy stuff, this.
Exactly. And I remember that vividly. And it was just a great degree, we did everything from insurance to marketing to obviously economics. I really, really enjoyed my degree. In fact, I haven't actually and never told this to a student, but one of my sort of proudest moments really was when one of the sixth ones went to Nottingham to do industrial economics. One of my students, that was actually one of my proudest moments as a teacher, really. And I think the course does still run today. I don't think it's changed its name, but obviously the modules will have changed. So that was a really nice thing when a student went there.
It is. I mean, a bit like you going into economics and teaching it and enjoying it. I think the teacher that inspired me the most when I was at school was actually my philosophy teacher. He was an ex-reverend called Paul Schreminski. We all used to call him Rev Prev for short, even though he wasn't still a reverend. He taught me philosophy and critical thinking. And I've always said, I think I had some excellent teachers growing up, but I think he's always the one that inspired me the most. And years after I left school, I wrote to him and said, to be honest, I probably wouldn't be where I am today without you having taught me the way you did. The impact you have on kids as a teacher is just profound. It's fantastic.
That's really nice, Henry. And, I think when you're going through those difficult days as a teacher, there are certainly ups and downs. But actually, when I've got to tell myself then, all teachers have to tell themselves those things that, there are real magic moments as a teacher. Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess I also wanted to ask you. So you go to university, you've had a couple of jobs, but you've not really mentioned much about the investing in there. So you buy this oil field that's actually not got oil in it, run by a guy that's on the breakfast news, but then probably shouldn't have. The account goes a little bit wrong. Did you down tools and go, oh my Lord, this is a disaster, I'm not going near it again? Or what was your next step after that?
Yeah, so I think I certainly didn't down tools. I just found it incredibly exciting, really, that, it was just, obviously I'd rather I hadn't lost money, but I just thought, this is amazing. But I suppose in those early days, and it is, it's a bit of a cliche, but I use Twitter a lot, and I'd look at what stocks people were ramping. I know that's the word now, but I probably didn't at the time, but people were ramping on Twitter, and I'd be thinking to myself, oh wow, this one's going to the moon, I better get into that stock. And of course it never happens, it invariably goes the other way. And I call that paying my dues to the stock market. That was a really worthwhile lesson in a bizarre sort of way. And obviously I learned from those mistakes. It took time. You don't learn the first time. It takes several mistakes, before you realize that actually following people on Twitter is not the way to do it, not the way to go about it. And I still use Twitter, but there are a few people I sort of trust on Twitter. And so I do, or X as I should say, shouldn't I? So I do sort of still get some ideas from X, but you get to know the people perhaps who you can trust a little bit more compared to others. I say it took me several goes to learn from it. I wanted to learn about how the stock market worked. So I read, I read lots of books. I essentially tried to consume as much information. It was before your podcast, but I'd be reading websites and doing research, and as I say, reading books in my spare time. I know Wheely used to like recommend the book, but The Naked Trader was the first one I read. I just think for anybody looking to get started, it's just a great starting point.
It
It's
really is. It really.
easy to read. It's entertaining. I have to be honest, I don't read a huge amount, but I will do now, of course.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a good change.
We'll talk about that later, definitely.
The Naked Trader is just a really good starting point. It's just really easy to read, and from there, that really, I think, gave me a grounding of some of the key principles. And I've read several books since, and I absolutely would not class myself as an expert now. But what I do is I like to consume information. Like I said, I watch your podcast every week. I watch other internet podcasts, and subscribe to a couple of websites and things. And I'll go on, check the RNSs most days. I just try and teach myself that way, really.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
That's a really admirable way of going about it, and also saying, I'm not an expert, and watch out for other people that are saying they're experts. I mean, I've got a blogger, right, The Ethical Entrepreneur, that I've been writing for years, but I wouldn't say I'm an expert. You can sign up to my emails, but I don't know how to pick 10 baggers. I don't know how to pick one. I can't. In my portfolio, I presume everything I own today will be worth more at some point in the future. I think it's undervalued, but I know for a fact that some of them aren't. Some of them I've just got them wrong, and I can't tell you with much certainty which ones those are. And it takes, you have to be kind of humble about that and go, well, yeah, one day you've got an oil well with oil in it, the next day it's got nothing. So you're educating yourself, you're reading your books, you're going on the blogs, you're listening to the podcasts. What would you say your sort of style? Would you say you've got a style of investing? How would you characterize your approach?
I would say I try to have a style. When I sort of sometimes take a step back and I think to myself, why have I bought that? I can't, sometimes that's what I think. But I think my style is I try and go for more small to mid caps. I think Pete called them tiddlers. I'm like 100 million market cap around there, 100 to maybe 300 million market cap, something like that. I suppose my starting point really is I'm trying to find companies that are profitable, definitely. Companies that have cash, and I like companies that don't have a huge amount of debt. That they're sort of key things. I also, again, slightly ironic because I've not always done this, but I try and only pick companies that I feel like I know what they, I understand the product. So again, these are sort of things that you talk about on the podcast. I try and stay away from oil companies now and mining companies, because I just don't understand what the RNSs are talking about, to be honest, when they talk, discoveries of various metals. I don't know what they mean, so I try and steer away from those kinds of companies. But yeah, they're really I like profitable cash rich companies. That's my sort of, and relatively small again, because obviously I guess the price is more likely to change up or down. They're more volatile, aren't they?
Okay,
Yeah,
so
that all makes sense.
let
Sorry,
me
go on.
interject here then, Paul, and just ask you then, with regards to your tiddlers, fledgling companies, and we're going to get on to the portfolio that you had in 2024 for the Twin Peaks Investing Challenge a bit later on. How do you screen for them in a sense of you're looking at the A, what it does, do you understand what they do? B, levels of profitability. And obviously, you've got certain sectors. You've already isolated oil and mining, so you've got others there now. You've got a whole swathe of companies to choose from. What's your process from going from, all of that to that? And as Henry said earlier, obviously now you've got the powerful software program that is ShareSmart that will enhance you going forward as well. But What were you doing before? How were you doing it? You mentioned also as well that you were using Twitter and other social media platforms to see what other people were talking about, but had learned to go away and then do your own research on top of that. You know, not just going off the, it's a gusher, Paul. Come on, you must buy it now. Yeah. So tell me
100%, yeah.
that, yeah, I didn't ask about your style, but tell me about the process, please.
So, I think I have sort of two processes really. One is what you've just said there, getting ideas first. So it might be from your show, it might be from X or whatever, and just thinking, doing a bit of research. I do subscribe to a couple of websites already, and I think they're a great, great starting point. I don't have a huge capital amount of capital. So when I sort of saw the prices of some of the subscriptions, you sort of think that's quite a lot of money actually for a year to subscribe to them. But in terms of the money that I think it saved me over the long run or made me over the long run, it's actually arguably the best investment, you know. So yeah, I do subscribe to a couple of websites, and they do a lot of, although I do sort of understand the basics of balance sheets and profit and loss accounts, I feel like some of these websites just do the hard work for you almost, and you can get a very, very quick snapshot about whether they're a good company or not. I mean, the one that I subscribe to at the moment is, I do subscribe to Stockopedia, and I quite like their very, I think it's very simple to see according to their algorithm, you know, which companies are good and which ones aren't. It's very, very quick to see that. So I try on their scoring system, I generally don't buy anything that's got a score of less than 80. So that's, a filtering system that I use that's pretty quick. Generally speaking, I wouldn't, if it's low, less than 80, I don't buy it, you know. So on top of
That's
those
their
other things,
ranking system that they've got on there, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah, 100's the best, one is the worst, essentially. So yeah, I wouldn't generally buy anything less than 80, and then add into that filtering, like I've already said, in terms of market cap. So I absolutely need to be making profit. I wouldn't buy a loss-making company that might turn around. I just, I don't know. I don't have had, never had good experience with that. I'll look at the chart as well. I'm not a, you know, a technical wizard. But I mean, I guess I'm pretty simple when it comes to chart. I generally buy shares in an uptrend. I've tried many times before to sort of catch a falling knife, or, you know, I've looked at shares and I think, oh, that's so cheap. It's no way it can go lower. You know, that's a bargain. Let's buy some. And of course, the inevitable happens. I mean, the worst one, I'll never repeat it, was Amigo Loans. I think they're still going. I'm not 100% sure. But I can remember vividly, I bought them three times within the space of about 3 weeks, thinking this is, it's going to bounce. It's going to bounce. Every time, bought it, sold it, bought it. So I just didn't learn three times. I mean, that's just insanity, isn't it? But
We've all been there. It's insanity, exactly. We've all been there, mate. But I think my last one was probably DGI 9, and eventually, you know, when you have to punch yourself, you know you've gone too far. We've all been there, mate. It's because we have this. Your words are brilliant. You know, it can't, surely you're screaming at yourself, going, surely it can't go any lower. Surely the management will sort it out, and they don't. You know, and I'm thinking to myself, these individuals, male and female, are being paid an absolute fortune to manage this company. How hard can it be? They've got a team of people. Yeah, I'm here all my little lonesome. I've read everything, I've checked everything, I've double-thinked twice. Spent all this time researching it. All I'm asking you to do is manage my money and never all the other shareholders' money for us, please. And stop the share price from falling. And they can't. And you know what makes it even worse, Paul? They still take their salary, right? Your investment, my investment, Henry's investment has gone like that, you know, to the point that it's just gone a straight line going downwards. We're not being paid to wait. We're losing the value of what we invested in. They're still getting paid exactly the same salary. And when they run out of money, they'll come back and dilute you again.
That's it. It's always the investor, the retail investor, isn't it, that loses out.
Absolutely. So you mentioned earlier, and I'm intrigued by this, and where you, and I want to know where you got this number from, and why. You said 100 mil to potentially 300 mil in your, I think that's a fledgling. It's called a fledgling class, right? Where and why did you end up in that? little segment there, that little, I mean, it's not a nice niche if it's profitable. It's got far more room to grow, but why?
I think that's really the reason. I just feel like there's more room for it to grow. I think you can, there are, and particularly in the current market, there's a lot of really, really good companies that are undervalued, and cheap, and certainly in terms of the competition. I wouldn't say I'd stick to that criteria, but it's a guide, I mean, I think there's some really big cap businesses, large cap businesses that I think are really good firms. But yeah, mainly I think it's just really the volatility side of things. I just think there's sort of room for them to grow more. I'd usually try and keep quite tight stop losses, which I know not everybody's in favor of, but if 10% as a rough guide is so I do try and keep my losses small, but obviously, things that you would talk about, Peter, letting your winners run. That's again, that's sort of part of my key philosophy, really. It doesn't always work. One of the ones that I put in the five choices, one in the five, in the investing challenge was Supreme, and I bought Supreme in real life as well. In fact, I bought a lot of the ones in real life. Supreme went down a little bit at the start of January, just after the competition started. And I thought, I don't, I thought, I also thought, to be fair, they're a vaping company, aren't they? They mainly do vapes. And I thought that it's not very ethical. I hate to admit it, but I'm an ex-smoker myself. I thankfully gave up, but I thought it's not very re responsible for a teacher to be holding a vaping company. So I did sell them. But of course, then what happened? Supreme went up 70%, and I made a loss on them. But, that's
Always happens.
sometimes how it works, isn't it? So yeah, my tight stop loss strategy doesn't always work, but I think it works more often than not, just keeping my losses small but letting those winners run.
Absolutely. And did you get part of that strategy from Naked Trader? Was it because he talks about stop losses a lot, doesn't he, originally,
Yeah,
regarding his trading process?
I think I probably did a bit from Naked Trader. Yeah, I don't,
Mm.
I certainly would have been in the back of my mind, certainly. Yeah, I mean, I've read a few books with various different strategies. I like the Phil Oakley book that actually was one of the prizes, but I have already read that
Yeah.
one. But there's some good
We're
strategies
gonna
in
go
there.
through all them books in a minute, mate.
Yeah.
I'm conscious of Henry getting, I see him biting his lip. He's
Oh,
got a
sorry.
question there for you regarding what you've just said, I think. So sorry, Henry, go.
Well, actually, no, it was more I just wanted to backpedal on that a little bit because you've mentioned the competition entrants. Now, I don't reckon many of our audience members can remember which were the five companies you entered last year. So could you just remind us which were your five picks?
And shall I give you a brief reason why I picked them as well? Would that
Yeah, go
be
for
okay?
it, go for it.
I mean,
Go for it.
and it's a bit of luck involved, of course. I was tracking them during the year and thinking, oh, these are doing quite well. And it was weird, really, because they start I bought obviously entered the competition. They started going up in January, pretty much all of them, and then they just carried on going up. And I was, wow, this is a crazy. So I bought Georgia Capital, which was sort of a slightly risky one. This is a business, it's like a government, I think it's government owned in Georgia, in Europe, of course. And my reasoning for that was I'd bought the Bank of Georgia the year before, and their shares had shot up, and I did really well on them. But Georgia Capital owned 20% of the shares of Bank of Georgia, but Georgia Capital hadn't really moved in terms of the share price. So I
I
thought
see, yeah.
there's likely to be something going on there. I think they went up
Smart.
about 20% in the year, so did okay on that. Metals Exploration, ticker MTL, again, gold producer. I wouldn't usually buy a mining stock, but they were making so much cash, and I just felt like the price, it was a good year for gold. I just felt like, with all the uncertainty around the world economically, I just thought the gold price was going to go up, really. So I wanted a gold company in there. That was why I picked them, and I think they doubled, got 100% on them, I think.
Correct. Yeah. Sure.
Supreme, I've already mentioned. Again, they were just making loads of cash, essentially, and no real debt. Not a very, arguably, a very ethical company, but I think they went up about 70%, something like that, during the year. Reynold is a manufacturer of industrial chains, really dull company, I guess. UK based. Again, that's another thing that I generally look at. I like companies that are home based. I don't want to invest usually somewhere in Africa or whatever. That it's different, different rules and regulations essentially. I like Renault. There was a small dividend. Again, made lots of cash. It had some debt, but the debt was going down, but revenue and profit was growing up. Reynold had a really good first half of the year. It went down a bit in the second, but I think I still made a decent amount on Reynold as well. And then the last one was Time Finance. So this is a company that essentially gives loans to businesses and small and medium enterprises. That was the smallest in terms of the market cap. I think it's only about 55 million market cap. But similar reasons, really. They're just, in my opinion, making a lot of cash, growing revenue, growing net profit. They had great reviews online, from the small businesses that have used them, really glowing feedback. I just thought, really, again, it was arguably a growth area, loans to small businesses. I think I doubled my money on them, really. And I still, they're, in fact, out of the five, they're the only one that I still hold. I did buy four of the five in real life, but I've sold Metals, sold Supreme, sold Reynold, but I've still got time now.
Yeah, I mean, you
Brilliant.
see that idea of owning all of them was something that was going to be a follow-up question for me, because when I entered, I thought, I know it's a bit of fun, and I know, you could pick anything in the world. You could pick a totally risky basket of explorers and hope one of them strikes gold and get a 5,000% return or whatever. But I've actually done the research in my real portfolio to figure out what I think's going to do well this year, so why not enter those? So I was a bit like you. I picked things that I knew and I owned.
Yeah.
So yeah, and you still own time, so.
Yeah, I do actually. I still own time. I sold Renault not that long ago, but like I say, it has dipped a little bit recently. I think I didn't sell Metals that long, Metals Exploration that long ago, but they recently announced a takeover of another company. I think it was Condor rings a bell. And
Oh, Condor Gold, yeah.
yes, I think so. I think they've just bought them. And in my Not in my relatively limited experience. Last time that happened, when a firm that I owned that had done really well bought out another one, it didn't do anything for the share price. So when that was announced, I actually sold them then. And I think it's actually dipped a little bit since. So I don't know what the share price is today, but yeah, I did well on Metals Exploration.
Nice.
But I might actually buy back in. I think, again, although it's going against my rules of buying miners, I just think the gold price, I can't see it dropping, to be honest. And
Lots going on to enable the price to keep going higher regarding gold going forward, and everyone's buying it up as a safety play, so that could be something. You mentioned something there, Paul, which intrigued me because I don't hear it said very often. There's only one other person that I know, two other people that I know that mentioned this, and one of them is Phil Oakley, who you mentioned regarding the book, but the other one's George O'Connor. You mentioned there, and I think it's a brilliant way to research companies, and also if you're looking to be employed by a company, is their online reviews. Now, I can't think of many retail, professional or otherwise, investors that actually look at the reviews of the company to review what other people are saying about them as part of their, do I want to invest my cash in that company? Where did that start? Where online are you looking for the reviews? Because I think it's an absolutely gem of an idea to add another layer of your research to.
So I think it was really relevant to that particular company. So Time Finance, they essentially offer loans to businesses, and you sort of think, well, why would you go to Time Finance? Why would you not go to Barclays? And that was really my thinking. And the idea is, I think that Time are much more flexible with lending money. They might lend money to riskier companies, that kind of thing. I just Googled reviews, Time Finance reviews, on Trustpilot, I think. And if you go on there, you'll see that they've got like 4.8 out of 5, I think. And glow. And I know that can potentially be edited a little bit, but so I take it with a little bit of a pinch of salt. But I just thought that was quite interesting. How many high street banks would have reviews that high, really.
No way, no way.
Yeah. So
Is
yeah,
it?
that was another thing. Yeah, another box ticked essentially.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah,
Oh,
I mean,
brilliant.
those reviews, I was talking to, I was listening to a fund manager the other day that was talking about, I think it was Vanquis Bank, it might have been. And he made the point that he knows a lot of people that run small businesses, and it's become almost impossible to get financing for small businesses. You go to HSBC, 20 years ago, you'd have had a branch manager that you knew, but now go to HSBC, you're told we can't issue loans from here, call the helpline. You call the helpline, you sit on hold for an hour, you get through to someone in Singapore or Indonesia or wherever, knows nothing about your business, knows nothing about your industry, knows nothing about the country. Makes a decision based on three figures, says yes or no, and that's it. Whereas smaller banks, a bit like Time Finance, actually, yeah, they'll come and see you and they'll get to know you, and you actually have a lending relationship
Yeah.
manager, and that's becoming a bit of a competitive advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you read the reviews, that's exactly what a lot of the reviews talk about. They mention staff members by name and things like that, and the personal touch that they were able to give them. So, yeah, that was quite important, really.
Yeah, spot on.
Oh, brilliant. I love that. And I love the fact that you, as you said, and reiterated it, that you actually purchased some of them in real life. So you've got, as we call it, skin in the game
Yeah.
regarding the competition. But throughout the year, you've kept more of a track on it, because some people we contacted were like, well, I didn't even know that. Yeah, they didn't even know how well their five were doing. And it took weeks to try and find them on because they hadn't been on Twitter, and lots of people left Twitter as well, X. But the fact that you invested in it mean that you monitored it more. You were more, to use the word, invested in the actual process. And that review side of it, I'm gonna have to steal that, Paul. I'm sorry, but I'm gonna have to do more of that. And people going, you do enough research already, but and I know I do, but to add that other layer of not complexity, but additional value add, yeah, I think is a really unique proposition to add to what you're doing. So yeah, that's definitely I love that idea. Right, so I could go back. I've got loads of questions from one of the other things you said. I'm going to leave them, park them, conscious of the time. So you smashed the competition, right, with 58.5%. You've been sent the books by our collaborator and supporter, Harriman House. You've got the 15 books there, right? But before we even mention the books, I spot behind me, right, a drum set. Right, I know it's an investing pod, but talk me through a potential accountant, a potential city individual, a teacher that looks after sixth formers, etc., etc. A house full of, I think you said earlier, three ladies
Three
and a
girls,
boss, female boss, and a female dog, I think. And you're the one with the drum kit. So tell me about that, and then we'll get back to the investing bit. What's going on here? Are you like making that noise to just shut them out?
It's
What's
a good
is
excuse,
that the
yeah.
st teacher stress being
They're like,
pushed
oh, yeah,
away?
absolutely. I mean, there's an element of
Explain. And when did
that.
it start, mate, please?
Oh, yeah, there's an element of stress relief, certainly. Now, I mean, I've been playing drums a long time. I mean, I probably started when I was 14 years old, to be honest. But yeah,
Wow.
and
Okay.
I played in a band in the when I was in my early 20s. Not a successful band, but it was good fun. And
Yeah.
I never ever really I didn't pick up a set of drumsticks for probably 15, 20 years, to be honest. And then about 5 years ago, a friend of mine introduced me to her husband or partner, who I don't know how well you are versed in 80s music, Peter, but he was in Doctor and the Medics. Doctor and the Medics. Yeah, he was.
Yes, I know Doctor of the Medics, mate. Oh, yes. That's amazing.
So
That's
I was in a
amazing.
band with the guitarist from Doctor and the Medics up until recently. Yeah.
Mate, claim to fame. Forget about winning the comp. Claim to fame. Just
This is
put that
it.
on your bio on X. Fantastic.
But yeah, so that band has sadly folded now, but I'm in another band. We practice once, we practice tomorrow night and just play gigs
Yeah.
in the local area, at pubs and things. And I just really enjoy
Brilliant.
it. There's no better feeling, really, when you're on the, well, apart from getting a 10 bagger or whatever, but no better feeling than being on stage and everybody's singing along and dancing and having a great time. It's a real buzz. So yeah, I really enjoy
Yeah.
doing that.
Brilliant. So what genre of music are you banging away and doing the music to, and songs are you singing to? What genre?
Yeah, I mean, we just do party pleasers, really, cover versions. So everything, you know,
Cover versions, okay.
Stereophonics and Beatles
Right.
songs that people can
Yeah.
sing along to. And,
Yeah.
you know, we always end with Sweet Caroline, very cheesy, but
Yeah.
everybody
Yeah.
just
Yeah.
goes, everybody just, you know, it's a winner, isn't
Right.
it?
It's a winner. My friend's favorite song. Every time we go out to a business do, they always, because her name's Eileen, she's like the numero uno business person in East Midlands. They always close with "Come on, Eileen," and we all
Yeah.
absolutely go ballistic. Do you play that? Do you do that song?
No, we don't actually, but maybe that's
Oh,
one to add to the list. Yeah.
you can add to the list. Okie dokie. No, brilliant, mate. Thank you for sharing that. And yeah, you've got to have a passion, mate. You've got to have something that, you have to have that. Yeah, it keeps your heart just pumping away. Right. Let's talk about the books then, mate. 15 glorious books by 15 fantastic authors. You're gonna need another shelf now, aren't you? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's going to keep you busy for quite a while, I think. Yeah, absolutely.
So talk us through your books. Which ones have you already thumbed through? Which one are you keenest to have a look at first? And which one were you thinking in when you opened the box went, oh yes. There's always one that you go, you pull out and you go, dum dum dum.
I think, you know, this is, as I say, I have looked at this one before, the Phil Oakley one, but I think it's a great book. It's complex in places. I wouldn't read this before The Naked Trader, but in terms of sort of strategy and things, it's a really, really good one.
Brilliant.
I've had a couple of messages from people on Twitter, of the authors. Let me just find them if I can help. Yeah, I mean, this one,
From
Akhil
Sheska.
Patel, The Secret Wealth Advantage. I've not read this one myself, but I think this is
I've
going to be
not
the
read that
first
one
one I
yet
read
myself. I do
properly.
have a copy.
Yeah, so that's probably going to be my first one. I'm quite
Okay.
interested on the. Oh, you've got it in front of you, actually. Yeah, the
Oh,
sun.
mate.
Yeah,
Sold
I
seven, it's now sold 7 million copies, I believe.
is that right?
Yeah,
I've not read
globally
it.
in various different languages as well.
Okay, yeah, I
Amazing.
mean
I
that's going
highly
to be.
recommend that. The
Okay.
biggest, the I keep saying this, and it's only in the last couple of years that other people are getting in tune with it. And I'm saying, well, that's the reason why the book sold so many, is because the biggest part of investing isn't buying the buying and selling and the research. It's the psychology whilst you're holding the stock, because the market's doing all kinds of stuff. Oh,
And I
Russia's
think,
going to do that, or I sell all my stocks. Oh, Trump's going to do that, or I sell all my stocks. It's like you've got to just sort this out upstairs, and that
100%.
book will certainly help.
Yeah. And I think, you know, sometimes I think I have sorted it out, and then, but then, you know,
We all do. We all do. We
and
all
then you
do.
sort of think to yourself, hang on a minute, I've just bought Amigo three times, you know, and clearly I have to sort of play that back in
Is
my
so
head.
true. That
Yeah.
is so true.
And I think I've had a flick through this one as well,
Steve
Stephen
Clapham, yeah.
Putnam.
Forensic accounting, yeah. Brilliant.
So yeah,
Yeah.
they're the ones.
Keep an eye out. Going back to Morgan Housel, this year I'm led to believe at some point this year there might be a second. Well, no, the second book is out, actually. Second book
Okay.
is out. So keep an eye out for his second book as well. I'm hoping we haven't finalized it yet, that I'm going to be able to include that second book in the 15 we get for this year. All right. So yeah, carry on with your books, mate. Just
Yeah.
go through them as you want.
So From Zero to Millionaire.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with this one, I'll be honest, but that's
Yeah. I
good.
think going the other way is a lot easier, Paul.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Millionaire to
Henry.
Zero. Yeah.
Henry Viola. I
I
thought he'd been quiet for a little while. So you
was going
carry
to
on,
say
mate.
I could write the alternative version anyway. I'll shut up
Yeah.
again. Go,
Yeah.
go, go, go.
Inspirational Investing, Amanda Taylor.
Yeah, that's good. Good book.
Investment Trust, that looks heavy going, but I'll give it a go.
Yes,
Not enough
Jonathan.
for
Is
me.
that
Very
Jonathan
good. That's
Davis?
very good. Jonathan Davis, yeah.
Very good book. Very good
Okay.
book. And given what's going on now with Sabra and all those other investment trusts, that'll be an education. I think giving that a good read, you'll probably get informed and maybe even consider a fund. I think you said earlier that you don't actually do funds and stuff. So I'm not saying that you should consider a fund. I'm saying it will inform you a bit more as to why you shouldn't or why you may want to consider them.
Looks that's right on my street, I
That
think.
you can follow Ben Carlson on X, and also Robin Powell as well. Both very good learned individuals. Great book that is.
Yeah, and you know, whilst I I do enjoy investing. I guess this is ultimately what I'm hoping to achieve, you know.
That's what we're all trying to achieve, mate. Absolutely. That's why we do it.
Pathfinders by J.L. Collins. Again, about financial independence.
Another one. Good one. Yeah, definitely.
Again, I'm not so familiar with these, I'll be honest, but Just Keep Buying by Nick Magiuli.
No. See, I pronounced that wrong well as well. And it's actually Majuli. Yeah,
Majuli,
I'm
I
not
beg your
joking.
pardon.
I am not joking. And he's on Twitter as well. He's heavy into the US side of things. I'm hoping to interview him at some stage when he's less involved in all what's going on in America. That's one on my dream sheet of people to interview.
I look forward to that. Russell Napier, Anatomy of a Bear, or The Bear.
Absolutely phenomenal, phenomenal book, mate.
I've not read it.
Absolutely brilliant book. Yeah.
Okay, look forward to
Wasn't
that
getting
one.
much attention as it should do, that book.
Okay. The Allocator's Edge by Phil
Yeah,
Huber.
Phil Huber. Yeah, another good
Huber.
book. Yeah.
Skeptical Investor.
Yeah, there it is. There it is. Mr. John Stepex on X. Brilliant guy. Currently at Bloomberg. Is an awesome brain, mate. Chapter 13, is the chapter that I went to. I tend to just get a book, look at the chapters and go, and I've read that chapter over and over and over again. I've read the whole book, but I've read that chapter over again. And it's how to buy stocks for more for less than they're worth, and that just sits in. I'm like, whoop, oh yeah,
That's it.
worth a pound. Can I buy that at 50p or 60p or 70p? I'm all over it. Brilliant chapter
Excellent.
13.
I remember that. I think I have read this one actually. Four Ways to Beat the Market. Algie Hall or Algie Hall.
Algie Hall, we've had him on the show. Brilliant individual, great spokesperson for all things investing. You might want to have a look in the foreword there in a couple of people that actually spoken and written about the book. Yeah, you might notice a particular name in there. Just don't want to brag or anything. Or is it at the back? On the back
Oh,
sleeve?
acknowledgements.
Not, yeah. Yeah, no.
I'll have to have a flick through. I can see Phil
Yeah,
Oakley's name in.
there's a certain Peter Higgins was involved with that book.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, I will certainly. Are you
Yeah,
sure, Pete? Are you sure your name's not that?
absolutely sure. Do you want me
He
to
put all
read you
the
what it
top
says?
typos in, Paul.
Let me read you. What does it say? Let me just see if I can find it. Oh my gosh. Have I even still got it?
Oh, I
Because
can't.
he sent me the script to the book and asked me to read it, and I just sent him a few bits back about some changes or potential things to consider, and then I wrote a little bit of a fore not foreword but a script on it, and he had it, and I didn't think he was going to do it, and he did it. He just added it to the book, which is that was absolutely bizarre.
Oh.
Where is it? I can't find it now. It is there,
It'll be
folks.
in there somewhere. Yeah,
I'm in there somewhere.
I'll
Can't find it
highlight
for
it
love
when I
and.
find it.
I can't find it for loving the money now. Henry, any questions about all them lovely books, mate?
What
And our
just one
lovely,
has more
lovely
Terry Smith?
collaborators giving him that book.
Well, I was gonna say I think it's fantastic. You've got the stack. There's a fair few in there I'd like to read. I mean, that Steve Clapham one's supposed to be excellent. That Allocator's Edge looks very, very interesting. There's some great, great books there. I mean, I think my only request really is as you read them, Paul, please do let us know how you get on with them on Twitter. You know what? What are they like? Because I'm probably going to be chasing you going up to Waterstones and buying my own copies.
No, I'll do my best. I'm so grateful, you know, for the books from Harriman House and for you guys for running the competition. I'm still in shock, if I'm perfectly honest, but you know, I'm really grateful. So yeah, that's the least I can do.
Brilliant. No, mate. Thank you ever so much. So, Henry, you're going to say something? Carry on.
No. I was, I mean, for me, we are very grateful, to be honest, to Harriman House. We don't mention them all that often on the pod. But for anybody that's never really listened beyond hearing us mention them every now and again, I could honestly recommend go and have a look at their website because, I'm a little bit biased in saying this, but they honestly have got a fantastic catalogue of investing books. Really, really high quality authors. There's some really fascinating topics that they write about and publish. And I just think they're a great publishing house. So, if people are listening to the podcast and do enjoy the content that Peter and I and that Paul talk about and our guests talk about, you could do a lot worse than going up to Harriman House and picking up a few copies every now and again, because they're a very, very thoughtful publisher. So there's a lot of value there to be had for people that want to go shopping.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer. The UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code Twin Peaks. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe today using the Twin Peaks promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit shareScope.co.uk for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. Thank you for that, Henry. So what I wrote, sorry, what happened in with regard to Algie's book, in on that book somewhere, it says, to quote, and it's a quoting me, this excellent book enables, inspires and supports the investor to focus on what truly matters to consistently beat the market. At times it felt like the book was personally written for me, the private investor. And the reason why I said that at the time, and he ended up adding it in the book, was because, and he doesn't promote this well enough, I don't think, is because that book is absolutely intertwined with the psychology of investing. And that this one here is now sold seven million copies. I'm not sure Algie's book has sold a million copies, and it deserves to have sold that much because it's an absolutely fascinating book, as is all those 15. But I can't say this enough, and I don't say it enough on the pod, and I don't really get into the arguments with people on X anymore. I just let them get on with it, talking to themselves in echo chambers. Is the psychology of investing and actually getting better at that and not being thrown off, you know, it's a bronco you're on. The market's just like that. Yeah. And if I say the B word, people think I said the F word, so I won't say what I was going to say about the thing before the bronco. But it is that hard. And we've seen it only this week and what happened on Friday with that regarding the US markets. And if you're holding NVIDIA or you're in Bitcoin and you're seeing it wobbling 5, 6, 16%, or Bitcoin going from 107 to all the way down to 90, you've got to know what you've got and the reasons why you've got it. And if you're holding a 10% stop loss, you would literally be in and out of it in the same day and hoping to buy it again and be out again. So sometimes you have to know what you know, to quote the famous phrase, you've got to know what you own and why. Yeah. And once you know what you own and why, sometimes you can call with larger stocks. Yeah. Not smaller tiddlers and fledgling stocks. You can go, you know what, I'm buying that. And unless something significant has impinged that company, I am not going to look at it every day. I'm not going to look at it every month. I'm going to wait for the trading updates. I'm going to wait. And regardless of what happens to the market, I'm going to leave it this company to do what it needs to do. Yeah, because where the greatest return's been made, it hasn't been made by the day trader or the person that's held the stock for 3 days or 5 weeks. It's been made by the person that bought NVIDIA 10 years ago. Yeah, you mentioned Zeneca, which became AstraZeneca, and Syngenta that got purchased by somebody else. I can't remember who purchased Syngenta in the end. But the investors in those two companies, from when you were working there, Paul, yeah, have made multifold their monies. And that stock has gyrated up and down, or those stocks have gyrated more than 5 or 10% on various different occasions. Those drawdowns will be quite significant. But nobody wants the drawdowns, really. None of us do. We've all had them. We don't want them. We want the companies just to be smooth line, just going up. You know, to use Jay's phrase, zoom out. Yeah, it's hard to do because the bloody thing's gone and punched me on the nose, or as Henry says, been pied in the morning by profit warning, you know? So, yeah. Brilliant books, mate. Very, very well done. I am absolutely beside myself that we've got you on the pod. I want to close the pod by asking you about teaching of the sixth form. Yeah, marking the books. Have you started an investing club for the kids? Those are three questions that I've got there for you, so you can remember those. And then lastly, we're going to finish off with you talking about some stocks that you currently own, right? So you go.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I can't talk too much to the students about sort of my personal situation, but yeah, I do try and get them interested in certainly in the business news on the BBC website and things like that. We'll at the end re very regularly, I'll put it on the board. You know, we did today. I was teaching, you know, 3 hours ago, and we finished the lesson by looking at the tariffs that Trump's put in and the Chinese retaliation and things like that. We had a discussion about that. So, you know, I try and bring the subject to life as much as possible. Occasionally,
Brilliant.
we'll bring up my I'll look for share prices and show them. Look, oh look, this is what's happened to the Tesco share price in the last 6 months. You know, so we talk about that kind of thing, and I try and get them encourage them to think like that, and certainly think long term. So we did have a fancy share competition, and again, you know, the students loved it. Similar to your challenge, really. You know, they have some 100,000 pounds imaginary money, of course, and the plan is to try and make as much as possible. And I hope that certainly some of the students go away inspired to maybe explore this a little bit further as they get older. I think most investors would wish they'd started doing it younger. Rather, you know, nobody wants to get into investing older, do they? They want to, you know, the same with me. I wish I'd have got into it much younger. I try and obviously drill down into the students not to take undue risks. And you're totally right about sort of holding for the long term. And I wonder whether maybe I should reevaluate a little bit and get some companies that I really trust for the long term, actually. You know, maybe that's something I need to think about. But I try and instill that in the students. You know, I certainly don't want them to be taking risks. You know, there's a lot of pressure, I think, on youngsters, you know, get involved with cryptocurrency and things like that. So, you know, we talk about that, and I'm a bit skeptical, I think, like you. So, you know, that's the kind of thing we'll talk about. But absolutely, I think it's really important that as economics and finance students, you know, I try and bring the subject to life as much as possible. And I told them I was coming on the pod. I played the clip of, you know, when you announced the winner. I played it in lesson, and they were like, really, they gave me
Brilliant.
a round of applause, you know.
Oh, I love that.
So I think that they all wanted me to say hello to them today, and I think they're going to watch the
Go
podcast.
for
So
it. Go for it. Go for
so
it. You
oh.
name and give a shout out to whoever you want, mate. Go for it.
Oh dear, I'm not going to be able to remember everybody's names, but one thing a Lilia said to me today, my school is very strange. I don't know if you watched the Bake Off, but last year a teacher at my school won the Great British Bake Off. He won it, the whole thing, a
Wow.
PE teacher. So she said to me
Wow.
today, last year it was Mr. Edgehill winning the Bake Off. This year you've won this. It's amazing. So I was like, you know, they're making the podcast on the same
Oh,
level as the Great British Bake Off, you know.
yeah. Just make that correction. No, we're not in that league. But yeah, lovely. Oh,
But yeah,
fantastic.
no, they're great. It's great students. You know, I do enjoy working with the older students, my economists, and as I say, my finance students. They're all good kids, and hopefully they do well in their exams, which are only a few months away now.
Yeah, absolutely. They've got a great teacher, an enthusiastic teacher that's given them a big scope and real life experiences. Regarding what's going on in the real world, and lived experience is brilliant. You know, academia is great, and you need to know certain things, but lived experience and actually seeing what's going on is vital for kids. We've got to prep them more than has been done historically. So you're doing a fantastic job, mate. Very, very, very well done.
Yeah, I think, sorry, that's really
Sorry,
important.
go
You
on.
know, I totally agree. And I think there's that, you know, some of the students often say this finance course that we're doing, unfortunately, it's ending this year. It's last year it exists. But, and it's a real shame because some of the feedback I get is that, you know, some of the students that we think every sixth form student should do this course. You know, that's the feedback I get. Hopefully, there'll be another course introduced at some point. But yeah, for whatever reason, I think it's funding actually, the course is stopping this
Oh,
year, which is a real shame.
that is a shame.
Yeah.
Oh,
There's a
wow.
gap in the
I'm
market.
sorry to hear that, mate. The sense of disappointment, your personal disappointment as well. Oh, gosh. Right. Okay. Paul, Real life stocks you currently own. We're going to do a little flash through some of those or any of those you want to share, and then I'm going to close. Henry's going to ask you some questions about those, I think, if he's got some. And then we're going to just give it a quick little heads up on the Memphis fundraise.
Yeah, I mean,
Henry,
I
have you got some
mentioned.
questions ready? You good? Okay, go, Paul.
I mean, I mentioned Time Finance already, but I think they're one that I've held for probably 18 months now, and I still think there's room for growth there. They did a trading update, I think, a couple of days ago, or interim results that were really, really positive. So I definitely think there's growth potential for Time Finance moving forward.
Okay, thank you.
And another small one that I've got is Alumask.
Alumask,
Alumask,
Alumask.
yeah.
Beg your
It's
pardon.
about
Thank
the
you.
aluminium.
See, I don't even
I
know how
own
to say
them.
it. Oh, do you?
I do.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, well, there you go. So this is you'll know exactly what they do then, Henry, but a company operating in water management and building products, and they use a lot of recyclable materials and things like that. So I quite like it from a corp CSR perspective. Still quite small market cap, 100 million market cap. But they've got the cash, they're very profitable, and judging by the comments of the CEO recently, they think there's confident that there's still quite a lot of growth going on. They had a really, really good year last year, didn't they? Really
Did.
good year. It's dipped a bit recently, but the confidence of the board and the ongoing successful financial situation, they offer a 4% dividend. I don't think it's going to set the world on fire. It's not going to suddenly explode and do 30% in one day or anything like that. But I do feel like there's opportunity for growth there. So they're another one that I hold at the moment.
Although they actually put out their half year results this morning.
Oh, did they? I haven't even
Yeah,
seen
I
that.
mean, group revenue was up 20%. The profit before tax was up 20%. They are doing really well. If your household finances were up 20%, you'd be jumping for joy. So shares were up, I think, at market close 3.5%, something like that. So I agree with you. I'm a fan.
Yeah, absolutely good. Oh, well, I'm pleased to hear that it's not, I'm in good company there. That's good. another one that I quite like is McBride. I think have they had some news? I feel like they've had some news out, a recent trading
Right,
update,
I've
I
got a
think.
feeling that was one Phil Oakley mentioned. I recognise the name
Yeah,
MCB, right?
and I mentioned
That's
it
right.
that's right.
Subsequently as well. Yeah,
Yeah.
we like that one. And I think Paul, with individuals being asked and some being coerced to return to work, I think that might help. Oh, sorry, return to the office, not to work. Apologies. Return to the office. I think that might enhance their returns going forward as well. So yeah, that's a
That's
good call on that one.
something I haven't thought about. But yeah, they do a lot of household products, don't they? And I think sort of supermarket own brands and things like that. And I think a lot with some of the more discount retailers, which I still think is a growth area, So I think McBride is one to look out for in terms of growth moving forward. Another one, again, it's slightly unethical, I'll be honest, but Gaming Realm, I think, is one that's got potential as well. GMR. They do slot machines, and so it's not really something that I'm not massively keen on promoting. But again, I just feel like I think they might have had some news out either
They
today or
have
yesterday.
today, yeah.
Yeah. So I bought them a few months ago. I think I'm at about break even at the moment, but just again, really positive updates financially. 22% increase in revenue. 30% increase in profit recently. And then, they're an innovative company. And I think, again, there's room to expand globally, really, with something like that. So, yeah, they're four of the ones that I own. I still really like things like Next and Marks and Spencer. I don't own shares in them, but I'm talking about
Oh,
long
Next is a
term.
fantastic. I mean, I hate retailers with a passion, but Next is one that, if anyone ever mentions they own it to me, I'm quite happy to say that's a quality name. So
Yeah,
crack on.
100%. They've just got it right, haven't they? They've got the online stuff, the next day delivery, the returns process. They've got in other brands into their website and things. Yeah, Next is just a phenomenal company.
And the stores are actually quite pleasant as well. I was actually in one at lunchtime today, so a colleague of mine needed to pick up a parcel, And I remember looking around this store and thinking, you go into so many M&Ss now and they're dropping to pieces. Really, really shabby clothing sections, half stocked. Go into Next, geez, everything's immaculate. The clothing's perfectly laid out, it's clean, it's tidy, it's spacious. I thought, wow, I was very impressed.
I really like the click and collect they do there. I just every time I go, my wife buys a lot of clothes, and every time I go and collect, there's always a queue of people, always a queue. People ordering online and then going to collect it from the store. I think, if you're looking for a long-term investment, I don't think you can go far wrong with that, to be honest.
I've got to ask you a question about this gaming realm, though. I mean, GMR. So I've just pulled it up on Sharescope. Market cap of a bit over 100 million. Shares are up about 5% today, presumably a good trading update this morning. What do they do? I mean, they develop, publish, and license what they describe as next generation mobile gaming content.
I think what
Virtual
they do,
reality or?
no, I don't think it's quite as impressive as that, to be honest. I think it is literally like on a bookmaker's website, they operate slot machines, the online slot machines and things, and then they're somehow they build make a contract with the bookmakers. I think that's a big part of their business.
Right.
Right,
Honestly,
so
it's
online
not
for
a
the
name.
bookies. Interesting.
I mean, I've
Right,
heard of
that's
the
interesting.
big.
It means that once they've sold that to the bookies, they maintain it, or they take a revenue cut.
That's right.
Yeah, so that
That's
income stream is almost like a royalty, isn't it? Once they've set it up for the companies, so that's not a bad angle to be at.
And
I
I
like you
don't.
say, being a school teacher, you're like thinking, yeah, I own that, but don't be going on them machines.
But
Don't be doing that.
they've got some sort of specific characters, I think, that are sort of they have a range of games around this character, or around this brand name that's been quite successfully received, quite well received by the people that goes on those websites. So
Brilliant.
yeah,
Love to
that's
hear
had a
that.
bit.
I've got one question I was meant to ask you earlier, and I'll ask that before we close with the Memphis stuff, Paul. You mentioned stop losses before, and that's your main vehicle for exiting and getting out of stocks. On the occasions that you've got a really good quality stock and you've been involved in it for quite a while, it's not really irked you that much, and it's not really moved, fluctuated more than 10% on any given more than one occasion. Other than the stop loss, when do you and what do you do regarding saying, okay, it's not triggered my 10%, or it has triggered my 10%, but that's not the reason for me getting out of the stock and exiting the stock. What are the other reasons why you exit a stock, Paul?
I think this is maybe something that I need to improve on. It's almost like a psychological factor in the sense that I just get maybe get a little bit bored. Another one that I've own at the moment that hasn't moved much, but I think is a really good company. And I think you've mentioned it on the podcast actually, is Thorpe, TFR, a lighting company.
I don't think I've ever mentioned that. I'm not sure
Oh,
anybody
right.
has.
Oh,
Have any
mate.
of you? It does ring a bell, FW Thorpe.
Oh,
I've
I've
never
that's
mentioned
right.
that. Okay.
FW Thorpe, that's right. And I did buy shares in them, and again I just thought, oh, this is like under it's a really good company, very profitable, it ticked all my boxes sort of thing. But I didn't very naively check volume, and there's just no volume there, and it re literally hasn't moved in the 6 months or whatever. It was fluctuated here and there, but nothing really.
This.
I don't quite know what to do about that. Do I wait for the dividend and then make a decision, or it's just nothing seems to be triggering it? Wait, I think what I'll probably do is just wait for the next update, see what happens, because I'm hoping that the update will be positive. There's nothing to suggest that it won't be, so that's probably my strategy there. Wait for the news, really.
I mean,
Sorry, Henry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, I've got, a friend of mine that's in a very similar, very low volume type investment, but it's a great business. They've been invested in it for about 5 years. Shares will move 5-6% on very little volume, but it's a great business. And what I've noticed tends to happen with this other firm is that nothing will happen for a year, and all of a sudden it'll leap up a bit, and then it'll settle, and you can collect your dividend the whole time, and it'll drop and it'll come back up. I think the thing is, as long as it's a good business, don't be afraid to hold it. You don't want to put your life savings in it, because if you try and sell it, you'll crater the price. But at the same time, it's actually quite a good business. So looking at the financials on Thorpe, I'd be tempted to sit tight, just collect your dividends.
Well, I'll do, just do that, Henry. I think I've done same. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I've done that a few times. Sort of got a bit bored, essentially. Got out, and then a couple of months later, it's got shot up, and you sort of think, "What was I thinking?" You know. Yeah, good advice.
Brilliant. Thank you for that, Paul. Thank you, Henry. I'm just going to close this pod by giving you, ladies and gents, an update regarding the Memphis fundraise, and just to inform you as to what I'm raising the monies for this time. And we are going to be fundraising the Twin Peaks Investing Pod and other things I'm going to do as well for a special educational needs employability scheme. And this is something we've run before. And last week, some of the young people started a work experience at the National Space Centre in Leicester, designed to help young people with special educational needs and disability gain valuable work experience. So, what the money goes to is to prepare the kids, train the kids, get them ready to be able to go almost semi-independently onto these work placements. They get on the work placement, they do it at various different employers that we've got, we're engaged with, National Space Centre being one of them. They go onto the course, and hopefully, in time, they can get a job with various different employees that we're engaged with. So, Caterpillar is one of the places that we've used in the past as well, and they've gone and ended up with jobs there as well. And so that's what I'm trying to do on this particular occasion. For the whole of the project we're going to run at the latter part of this year, it's going to cost about 30K, right? So I'm going to do my level best to push on and get as much of that money as possible so we can run this at the latter part of 2025 into 26 and get as many young people who have been disadvantaged. And the cohort we're going to be looking at and working with more closely within this particular scheme next, well, this year and next year, are the kids that have been in the looked after system. They've actually been in the care system. So not only have they been in the care system, but they're disabled and in the care system. So if you think about all the disadvantages that they have been multiplied upon them, that's the cohort we're going to try and support the very best that we can this year. So if you can make a donation to the pod to support Memphis, please do so. You can go to the Just Giving page, which is www.justgiving/page/Peter Higgins, and you should find that. Or just type in Peter Higgins, Memphis, and all the money will go to Memphis. The last donation we had was from Martin Bedder. Thank you ever so much, Martin. Martin donated £50 plus gift aid and took our total to £365. And Martin's words were, "Good luck with this year's Memphis fundraising, a very worthy cause, chosen again, Peter. Oh, and Pod 145 was spot on, two thumbs up." So thank you very much for that, Martin. Ladies and gents, Paul, I know you were nervous, mate, but you absolutely smashed it. It was just good to see you just relax, have a bit of banter with myself and Henry. You know, he tried his best. He didn't really go on and bang on too much about Nottingham University and all things surrounding Nottingham being the bee's knees. So thank you ever
Because
so
it's
much for
an
gracing us with your
undeniable
presence,
truth
sir.
of the universe.
Well, thank you both very much for inviting me on. I really do appreciate it. And, keep doing what you're doing. I really enjoy the podcast. And, yeah, thank you.
No, you're welcome. I mean, you did say I'm not sure whether we caught it, how long you've been listening to the podcast and how far it goes back. So please share with us that before you go, because I'm conscious that the quality of the pod, audially, we didn't do visuals before. It was just, no, not going up, not going, not putting this face on camera, mate. It doesn't deserve it. But you've been listening for a while, haven't you? So how long are we talking now? And what are the good, the bad, and what could we, and what could, we've got you here, so what could we improve upon as well?
I've been listening for as long as I can remember. I mean, I don't know if I was there right at the very start, but certainly for several years I've been listening. I don't want to freak you out, Pete, but I often listen to you in bed, you know.
Oh, you did. Oh, you should. Oh, that's not good. Not, your kids are going to be listening to this, mate, at school.
So yeah, that's my sort of go-to. I look forward to the Friday when it comes out. I put a
Oh
little
my
earphone
gosh.
in my ear and fall asleep with listening to Pete put me
Yeah,
to sleep.
that's the bit there. Everyone's going to go, yeah, you listen to it to help you go to sleep because that's that guy's voice is just like, yeah, exactly.
But
Thanks
yeah,
for that,
no,
Blue. Thank
but
you.
I have been listening for a while, you know. Yeah, and as I say, I get a lot of my ideas from there. I feel like I've learned a lot from the podcast over the years. So yeah,
Yeah.
I would recommend it to anybody interested in investing or experienced or otherwise.
Brilliant. That is very, very kind of you, sir. That's very, very kind of you. I'm conscious I keep calling you sir. It's a conscious thing when I speak to teachers, so apologies. Paul, closing statement, Henry, what do you want to say, sir?
Just a huge thank you for joining us, Paul. Really, really enjoyed having you as a guest. Congratulations again on winning those books. Please do keep in touch. And thanks to everybody that's tuned in and fed back on episode 144. It seems like 30 seconds since we were recording it, and we're getting a lot of feedback. So please do keep it up because it's lovely to hear from everybody. So enjoy episode 145, I guess, or I hope you've enjoyed it.
Yeah, podcast. This is 146, but the comments we were getting
Oh.
are for 145, and 144. We're still getting comments for because that's when we announce the winner and the winners. Yeah, so
I'm
we're still getting
losing
feedback
losing
from that
track.
particular pod. Yeah, I think if we're lucky, Henry, Paul, that particular one with the festive special, I think on even on YouTube that could become our first Twin Peaks YouTube that hits 1,000. And if that's the case, it could nudge the whole pod audio and all different platforms on to 4,000. I'm going to keep a track on the numbers. It could become our first pod that does 4K because that's my target for the average. The average is still below that, but that's my goal for 2024. But yeah, everybody wanted to know the winner and also listen to the individuals on that particular pod. But we'll get the numbers on this one. Get all your kids listening to it, mate, in the school, and the numbers will just go. Yeah?
I'll do my best. I'll do my best.
Listen. And if you're ever playing with the band and you manage to make it further than the bottom of the 47, A47, then get yourself to Leicestershire, mate. Give me a shout and I'll come and have a listen as well.
Oh, we'd love to. We'd
Yeah?
love to, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah? Cool. Right. Ladies and gents, that's the close for podcast 146. With myself, Peter Higgins at Conquers 3. Please follow Paul Edenbrow at Paul Edenbrow. That's how it's spelled. EDN ED, sorry, start again. EDENBROW. You can find him on Twitter and get him some significant number of followers. And my fantastic host, Henry Viola here at HD Viola. And that is it. Take care. God bless you all. Paul, thank you ever so much, guys. You were brilliant, mate. Thank you ever so much.
Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit shareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.